You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Please remember to watch your language.
Look, I can't speak without swearing, and I've only got my grade 10, and I haven't had a cigarette since I've been arrested, and I'm ready to f***ing snap. So I'd like to make a request under the People's Freedom of Choices and Voices Act that I be able to smoke and swear in your courtroom. Because if I can't smoke and swear, I'm f***ed.
The following programming may contain content that some listeners find offensive. If you are sensitive to foul language or explicit content, please turn your radio the f*** off now.
It's the Atheist Comedy Stand-Up Edition of Radio Free Thinker. This week a collection of atheist stand-up routines, I hope you like to laugh. Let's begin episode 334.
It's time for Radio Free Thinker, the show that applies skepticism and critical thinking to everyday issues. The place where reason and reality cross swords, politics, religion, economics, and of course, science. Now let's get ready to be skeptical.
The cosmos is also within us. We're made of star stuff. We are away. The cosmos can know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are other suns.
We have traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
Hello and welcome to Zai, Don, your skeptical philosopher and political scientist. For those of you who may not know, my voice is still recovering, so we have Hal providing vocals this week. For a change of pace, I thought this week's show would cover some things that we have been a little light on lately, atheism and laughter, so to cure this deficiency. First up, we have Ricky Gervais discovers the Bible. Let's listen and laugh.
She's pretty big. I used to think we evolved from apes. Darwin's theory of evolution through natural selection seemed pretty watertight. But in doing research for this show, I came across a theory that deviates from Darwin's, and I believe that. I just found it in a dusty old book in a library. It's called The Bible. And Darwin was wrong. We didn't evolve, God made us. So I just want to explain to you exactly how that happened. Okay. The first book of Moses, commonly called Genesis. Start at the beginning. Fairly big book, but... Friday, innit? Lock the doors? Okay. Took me 4 years to get this platform. Now then, listen. Just think if I'd have blown it, just going door to door. Right, okay. Some of the things you're hear do sound a little bit far-fetched, I admit that. I thought it was a bit, but then I found out that the other name for the Bible is the Gospel, so it is all true. So, luckily, clue is in the title. Okay. Come on, it's the Bible. Okay. Chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. It doesn't go into detail. He doesn't need to explain to you. You probably understand it because he's got a massive brain. Yours is little. And you go, what? He goes, don't, what? Just trust me. I did. And also, if he explained it to you, it would like ruin the enigma. Do you know what I mean? You'd go, that's amazing. He just says, it's a trick. And you go, oh. So it's like seeing, no, it's like David Blaine did something. And you go, oh, that is real magic. And you go, no, I'm just standing on one leg and lifting the other up. Easy. So. keeps his cards very close to his chest. God, good luck to him. He can do what he wants. He can do anything, so he can do what he wants. Okay, here we go. In the beginning, God created heaven and earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. Bit dark, he sorted that out. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. Huh? Isn't that brilliant? Hey? Oh, come on, that's amazing. He made light up. Just, it was dark, it was nothing before. It's not like he saw some on holiday and went, that'll be good back on Earth. He made it up. Do you not, there was nothing to go by. It wasn't like there was twilight and he went, let's have that a little bit brighter. He just went, let there be light. And at the speed of light, he didn't go, let there be light. Come on, I'm busy. It's the first day. I've got a lot to do. I've only got 7 days. It just, do you know what I mean? And he probably didn't have to say it. He did say it, but he could have gone, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Brilliant. Do you know what I mean? Come on, he's amazing. What are you? Free your minds. Listen, right, OK. So he did the light, invented it. Which means that he created the heaven and the earth in the dark. Is that? I'd have gone, right, let's have a little bit of light on the situation, let's see what we're doing, right. I need some planets. He went, that's everything, let's have a look, brilliant. And God saw the light and saw that it was good, even though he says so himself. it is good, but just. If there's pride in your work, then there's arrogance. So, you know, we'd all like to write our own reviews. But, OK. And lo, Gervais was not only a handsome man, but a funny fucker. Maybe I'll do me own. Who knows? OK. Anyway, he called the light day, he called the darkness night. That's chapter one, did all those things. Chapter two, he did... swarmy things that swarmeth, creepy things that creepeth, all that, all the beasts of the field, made man. Different method there. He could have said, let there be man. There would have been man, definitely. But he made him out of some dust just because he can. Well, we don't think we'll do that. Right, done. It's a man. What do you want, a woman? Yeah, you can make it out of some dust. No, one of your ribs. You can't do that. All right? So, brilliant. And he made them, put them in the Garden of Eden with all the animals, and they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed. OK, brilliant. He's done well there. Now, chapter three, and I'm not having a go at him, because he is brilliant, but in my humble opinion, I think the snake was a mistake. OK, chapter three. His difficult third series. It's going to get criticised, whatever, isn't it? After all the good he did in one and two. He should just leave it there. Chapter 3. Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, it's a talking snake, did I not? Yeah. Oh, yeah. What, you don't believe he can make a talking snake? You having a laugh? Of course he can, do anything. And perfect diction as well. Not a mumbling snake. Why? He didn't make all that snake to all. Oh, fucking hell, I've got a cleft palate. Why did I do that? Perfect. Again, that's how I wanted it. Right. Oh, and it speaks English. Which is lucky for me, because I'd be fucked. I don't speak another language. No, I did O-level French, but you don't need to speak French if you're English. You don't need to, don't, you know what I mean? You don't. If you go to France, point, talk a little bit louder. If he still doesn't understand what you're saying, smash the place up. Securing the knowledge that you tried your best. Don't get me started on the French. Don't get me started. They know about animals. They fucking eat most of them. God. I can have a go at the French because I'm half French, half English with a stupid name like Gervais. No, I'm half French, half English, and I've got qualities of both, French and English, which is good. So I am crap in bed, but at least I've got bad breath. Not as bad as the Swiss. I don't start. Oh, we're neutral. We don't want to fight on either side. Not really a loss not having Switzerland on your side in a war, is it really? With their army. Have you seen the little knives they carry? What? Oh. All right, back off. He's got some tweezers. And he said unto the woman, yea, hath God said ye shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, she's talking back, she knows no better. And the woman said unto the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God hath said, ye shall not eat of it, neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. And the serpent said unto the woman, getting quite chatty now. And the serpent said unto the woman, ye shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day ye eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil. He's saying, well, okay, that's not strictly true. He's pulling the wool over your eyes a little bit there, because he doesn't want you to have this sort of knowledge. He doesn't want you to lose your innocence, so you won't die. She believes the snake. She eats the apple. She gives it to Adam. And the snake's right. They don't die, but their eyes are opened, and they're embarrassed by their nakedness. And they cover themselves up. God comes along, he sees this, he's furious. Ooh. He goes, what are you wearing clothes for in the Garden of Eden? They go, embarrassed in that. He goes, no. Take them off. No. What? I was looking at them. I made them big so I could see them from heaven. No, you. Who told you about the apple? She goes, the snake stitched it right up. So God goes mental. You know, he's firm but fair. Well, you don't. If he loses his rag, he can do anything. So he starts handing out punishments. The punishment he gives to the man is that he'll have to toil the field from now on. He won't get manna from heaven. Punishment he gives to Eve, womankind, is that she'll have terrible pain in childbirth. The punishment he gives to the snake, who fucked up everything, remember? The punishment he gave to the snake was, you shall crawl on your belly all your days. Not really a punishment for a snake. I bet it couldn't believe its luck. Stand there going, I'm in fucking trouble. And you have to crawl on your belly. But I already, oh no! Oh, yeah, you've done me, No, we're even now, I asked for that, okay, cheers, see you later. Oh, how does this work again? Oh, ow, oh, I'm being punished. Oh, this is rubbish, I wish I could fly like normal. I don't know why he put the snake there, particularly one that talks and blabs, do you know what I mean? Or don't have the tree there, one or the other. It's an accident waiting to happen, isn't it? Where was he, by the way, when this was happening? Well, he's meant to be everywhere. When the snake came up to Eve and went, so why didn't he go, fuck off, shut up, don't listen to that. Fuck off, just over it. Bollocks. Just keep an eye on it. Or make it all. And then go to Eve, right, Eve, come here, right, that apple, right, I wouldn't lie, I'm God, right, it will kill you. Oh, by the way, if a snake comes and talks to you, he's a lying little shit. But I used to believe in all that.
We will return after this break.
Attention grad students, share your research, find out what's going on in other disciplines, approach your work from a new angle. Check out Fire Talks, the interdisciplinary discussion forum sponsored by the Research Commons at Kerner Library. Visit bit.ly/firetalk for more information.
You are listening to Radio Free Thinker on 101.9 FM, the skeptical genesis of free thought in Vancouver. And we are back. Next up with Have Some Classic George Carlin and the BS That Is Religion.
But in the bullshit department, a businessman can't hold a candle to a clergyman. Because I got to tell you the truth, folks. When it comes to bullshit, big time, major league bullshit, you have to stand in awe. In awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims, religion. No contest. No contest. Religion. Religion easily has the greatest bullshit story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you. He loves you and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all powerful, all perfect, all knowing, and all wise. Somehow, just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars, they pay no taxes, and they always need a little more. Now, you talk about a good bullshit story. Holy shit.
Thank you very much. But I want you to know something. This is sincere. I want you to know, when it comes to believing in God, I really tried. I really, really tried. I tried to believe that there is a God who created each of us in his own image and likeness, loves us very much, and keeps a close eye on things. I really tried to believe that, but I gotta tell you, the longer you live, the more you look around, the more you realize something is fucked up. Something is wrong here. War, disease, death, destruction, hunger, filth, poverty, torture, crime, corruption, and the ice capades. Something is definitely wrong. This is not good work. If this is the best God can do, I am not impressed. Results like these do not belong on the resume of a supreme being. This is the kind of shit you'd expect from an office temp with a bad attitude. And just between you and me, in any decently run universe, this guy would have been out on his all-powerful ass a long time ago. And by the way, I say this guy because I firmly believe, looking at these results, that if there is a God, it has to be a man. No woman could or would ever fuck things up like this. If there is a God, if there is, I think most reasonable people might agree that he's at least incompetent and maybe, just maybe, doesn't give a shit. Doesn't give a shit, which I admire in a person and which would explain a lot of these bad results. So rather than be just another mindless religious robot, mindlessly and aimlessly and blindly believing that all of this is in the hands of some spooky, incompetent father figure who doesn't give a shit, I decided to look around for something else to worship, something I could really count on. And immediately, I thought of the sun. Happened like that. Overnight, I became a sun worshiper. Well, not overnight, you can't see the sun at night. The first thing the next morning, I became a sun worshiper. Several reasons. First of all, I can see the sun. Okay? Yeah. Unlike some other gods I could mention, I can actually see the sun. I'm big on that. If I can see something, I don't know, kind of helps the credibility along, you know? So every day I can see the sun as it gives me everything I need. Heat, light, food, flowers in the park, reflections on the lake, an occasional skin cancer, but hey. At least there are no crucifixions, and we're not setting people on fire simply because they don't agree with us. Sun worship is fairly simple. There's no mystery, no miracles, no pageantry, no one asks for money, there are no songs to learn, and we don't have a special building where we all gather once a week to compare clothing. And the best thing about the sun, it never tells me I'm unworthy. Doesn't tell me I'm a bad person who needs to be saved. Hadn't said an unkind word. Treats me fine. So, I worship the sun. But I don't pray to the sun. Know why? I wouldn't presume on our friendship. It's not polite. I've often thought people treat God rather rudely, don't you? Asking, you know, trillions and trillions of prayers every day. Asking and pleading and begging for favors. Do this, give me that, I need a new car, I want a better job. And most of this praying takes place on Sunday, his day off. It's not nice, and it's no way to treat a friend. But people do pray, and they pray for a lot of different things. You know, your sister needs an operation on her crotch. Your brother was arrested for defecating in a mall. But most of all, you'd really like to fuck that hot little redhead down at the convenience store. You know, the one with the eye patch and the club foot, huh? Can you pray for that? I think you'd have to. And I say, fine, pray for anything you want. Pray for anything. But what about the divine plan? Remember that? The divine plan. Long time ago, God made a divine plan. Gave it a lot of thought. Decided it was a good plan. Put it into practice. And for billions and billions of years, the divine plan has been doing just fine. Now you come along and pray for something. Well, suppose the thing you want isn't in God's divine plan. What do you want him to do? Change his plan? Just for you? Doesn't it seem a little arrogant? It's a divine plan. What's the use of being God if every rundown schmuck with a $2 prayer book can come along and fuck up your plan? And here's something else, another problem you might have. Suppose your prayers aren't answered. What do you say? Well, it's God's will. Thy will be done. Fine, but if it's God's will and he's going to do what he wants to anyway, why the fuck bother praying in the first place? Seems like a big waste of time to me. Couldn't you just skip the praying part and go right to his will? It's all very confusing. So to get around a lot of this, I decided to worship the sun. But as I said, I don't pray to the sun. You know who I pray to? Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci. Two reasons. First of all, I think he's a good actor, okay? To me, that counts. Second, he looks like a guy who can get things done. Joe Pesci doesn't fuck around. Doesn't fuck around. In fact, Joe Pesci came through on a couple of things that God was having trouble with. For years, I asked God to do something about my noisy neighbor with the barking dog. Joe Pesci straightened that cocksucker out with one visit. It's amazing what you can accomplish with a simple baseball bat. So I've been praying to Joe for about a year now. And I noticed something. I noticed that all the prayers I used to offer to God and all the prayers I now offer to Joe Pesci are being answered at about the same 50% rate. Half the time I get what I want, half the time I don't. Same as God, 50-50. Same as the four-leaf clover and the horseshoe, the wishing well and the rabbit's foot, same as the mojo man, same as the voodoo lady who tells you your fortune by squeezing the goat's testicles. It's all the same, 50-50. So just pick your superstition, sit back, make a wish, and enjoy yourself. And for those of you who look to the Bible for moral lessons and literary qualities, I might suggest a couple of other stories for you. You might want to look at The Three Little Pigs. That's a good one. Has a nice, happy ending. I'm sure you'll like that. Then there's Little Red Riding Hood, although it does have that X-rated part where the big bad wolf actually eats the grandmother, which I didn't care for, by the way. And finally, I've often always drawn a great deal of moral comfort from Humpty Dumpty. The part I like the best, all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again. That's because there is no Humpty Dumpty and there is no God. None, not one, no God, never was. In fact, I'm gonna put it this way. If there is a God, may he strike this audience dead. See, nothing happened. Nothing happened. Everybody's okay. All right, tell you what. I'll raise the stakes. I'll raise the stakes a little bit. If there is a God, may he strike me dead. See, nothing happened. Oh, wait, got a little cramp in my leg. And my balls hurt. Plus, I'm blind. I'm blind. Oh, now I'm okay again. Must have been Joe Pesci, huh? God bless Joe Pesci. Thank you all very much. Joe bless you. Thank you very much.
We will return after this break.
Stressed lately? UBC Yoga Club is here to offer you a peace of mind. Come out to any of our 17 weekly classes running 7 days a week, ranging from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. We have a class to accommodate your needs and abilities. Check us out at ubcyogaclub.com.
You are listening to Radio Free Thinker, the bullshit free skeptical radio show on 101.9 FM Vancouver, Canada. And we are back. Next up is some Tim Minchin and his thoughts of spiritualism and feet. Let's listen in.
Sometimes because material like that doesn't necessarily respect entirely some of the idiosyncrasies of a couple of the major monotheistic doctrines. People make the assumption upon listening to such material that I'm not religious myself, which is pretty spot on. But sort of beside the point. I don't want to be divisive, you know. And besides, I think you can be spiritual. I think you can have a deep sense of spirituality without actually adhering to any of the major religions. As it turns out, I'm not at all spiritual. I've just got this real sense of emptiness. But I believe in things, you know. I believe in rocks and gravity, and I have like a relativist morality which I can manipulate to suit my worldview so that I can justify group sex, for example, whilst abhorring group prayer. Works for me. But you have to admit, really, ironically, I guess, given all the religious violence in the world, one of the things that actually binds us all, that we all have in common across all cultures and indeed all time since the beginning of recorded thought, is this tendency to invoke the supernatural to help us explain those things in our lives which we find difficult to explain using only the evidence at hand, you know. A modern example of this, I saw on telly recently a show about, I was called, I think it was Miracles in the Womb, or Extreme Wombs, or something. Changing Wombs. It wasn't that. But anyway, it was about multiple births, and a woman had given birth to naturally conceived identical quadruplet girls, which is very rare. And she said, the doctors told me there was a 1 in 64 million chance that this could happen. It's a miracle! Of course, as we know, it's not, because things that have a 1 in 64 million chance of happening happen all the time. To presume that your 1 in 64 million chance thing is a miracle is to significantly underestimate the total number of things that there are. Maths. It's interesting, actually, now that I live overseas, it struck me anew when I came back to Australia this time, that here we seem, this compulsion towards the supernatural and the mystical seems to manifest itself mostly in Australia in the presence of bumper stickers. You know the ones I'm talking about? They're usually purple, and they generally imply the existence of a benevolent spirit of some sort that are looking after us all, and especially the people who bothered to put the sticker on their bumper. They say things like, the goddess is dancing, and my favourite probably is, don't drive faster than your angel can fly. As if of all the possible restrictions an angel might face, speed is the... Unless they're just proposing the possibility of the existence of unfit angels. And probably the one that annoys me most, because it's most common, I think, is, I'm sure you've all seen it, magic happens. Magic happens, they usually sparkle. I don't know what it is about magic happens stickers on cars, but every time I see one, I want to get out my permanent marker and sort of sneak over and write underneath it, so does cot death. Under which a spiritual person with their slightly more ephemeral marker might choose to write something like, yeah, but sometimes the magician has to do bad magic in order to, A, test our faith, or B, for the purpose of a greater good. Under which someone like me, with their permanent marker, might choose to write something along the lines of, fuck off. Thus ending an otherwise perfectly sensible bumper-based philosophical argument. I have a particular religious friend I go head-to-head with and get very boring at dinner parties with on these sort of big questions, and he always sort of seems to think that to be sceptical is to be cynical, and that my view of the world sees no beauty, which I always argue is not the case. I mean, I find the world a really exciting place. There are ideas that are a bit more science-y that are just as exciting as the kind of magic-y ones, you know, like the one of the greatest ideas of all time, evolution, the theory of natural selection, you know. Not only is it, how would you say, right... I'm just practicing my timing for my American tour. Pause, right, and duck. Duck. Not only is it good science, but it's also really thrilling, don't you think, this idea that an individual of a species can be born sort of mutated in a good way. And in the moment of that individual's birth, it holds within its genetic code the potential for its entire species to take a huge evolutionary leap forward. It's amazing. And I always think, what would life have been like being one of those individual mutant freaks? You know, what did the other kids think? Imagine being the first dude ever to have feet. I reckon that would be really tough. And also, what I wonder is, how did these individuals with their new bits, like, how did they figure out how to use them? Did they just stumble upon their potential purpose one day, just accidentally, you know? Imagine you're a fish, and you're just swimming in the ocean with your school, and you're all just hanging out, swimming, same as always, because you're fish. And suddenly, out of nowhere, Tony... fucking Tony. Tony just goes... I'm getting out. Yeah, I'm freezing. You're a fish, Tony. Yeah, well, I'm a cold fish. I just want to pop out for a bit, you know, maybe lie on my towel. I'll bring you an ice cream. Yeah, don't bother, Tony, you're a freak. Come on, school, let's go. Let's ostracize him for being different. Yeah, let's ostracize him. Tony's a freak. Let's ostracize him for being different. No, don't ostracize me. I'm just a little bit different. Oh, bugger you then. I'll show you guys. Come in handy. And imagine what Tony would think standing there on his brand new feet on the brink of the beginnings of mankind as we know it. If he could look forward just a few short hundreds of millions of years to see one of his descendants, an Israeli Jew by the name of Jesus, having a nail hammered through his feet. The very feet that Tony provided him with as a punishment for having a sort of schizophrenic discourse with a god who was created by man to explain the existence of feet in the absence of the knowledge of the existence of Tony. I think that would blow his little fishy mind. This religious friend of mine, arguments often end with him telling me that I'm not very open-minded. And because he's my friend and I respect him, I've written him a song. It's called, If You Open Your Mind Too Much, Your Brain Will Fall Out. Which I think is brilliant. It's so, so clever. Unfortunately, I didn't come up with it myself. I read that in a book. So to avoid copyright issues, I've given it a subtitle, which is, Take My Wife! If anyone can show me one example in the history of the world of a single psychic who's been able to prove under reasonable experimental conditions that they are able to read minds. And if anyone can show me one example in the history of the world of a single astrologer who's been able to prove under reasonable experimental conditions that they can predict future human events by interpreting celestial signs. And if anyone can show me one example in the history of the world of a single homeopathic practitioner who's been able to prove under reasonable experimental conditions that solutions made up of infinitely tiny particles of good stuff dissolved repeatedly into relatively huge quantities of water have a consistently higher medicinal value than a similarly administered placebo. And if anyone can show me one example in the history of the world of a single spiritual person who's been able to show either empirically or logically the existence of a higher power with any consciousness or interest in the human race or ability to punish or reward humans for their moral choices or that there is any reason other than fear to believe in any version of an afterlife, I will give you my piano, one of my legs, and my wife.
Next up, we have some British comedy from a few years back. Here is some material from Dave Allen. Let's enjoy.
There's a fellow walking into a bar, and standing outside is a nun. And she looks at him and she says, Before you enter this den of iniquity, think of your mother and your father. He said, they're dead. They're dead in heaven. She said, well, think of the damage the alcohol is going to do to your brain. What? What are you talking about? Have you ever had a drink? And the nun says, no. He said, well, how the hell can you stand there talking about it and saying drink is going to do damage to your brain if you've never had it? I'll tell you what, I'll go in, get you a drink, bring it out, give it to you, you drink it. If you don't like it, then you can talk about it. But don't talk about things you've never experienced. What'll you have? And the nun says, I don't know. What do ladies generally drink? He says, gin. She says, all right, I'll have a gin. But get it in a cup so nobody will notice. The fellow goes into the bar and he says, give us a pint of beer and a double gin in a cup. And the fellow says, is that bloody nun out there again?
The Pope, discussing the existence of God with an out-and-out atheist, starts off very correctly, discussion, and as the hours go by, it gets more and more heated, and eventually the Pope turns to the man and he says, the mom! Get the mom! And you, come here. You are like a man who is totally blindfolded in a dark room looking for a black cat that is not there.
The fellow said, with all respect, Your Holiness, I think there's great similarity between us both.
He said, what do you mean, similarity?
He said, well, as far as I'm concerned, you are like a man who is blindfolded in a totally dark room looking for a black cat that isn't there. The only difference is that you found it. Get a nun. Gets up in the morning and leaves and walks down the corridor. And another nun looks at her and says, it's a difficult thing to say, another nun. And says,
You got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning. And she goes on down, and another nun says, you got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning. And this happens 15 times, and by then she's livid. And she meets the Mother Superior. And the Mother Superior is just about to open her mouth, and the sister says, don't tell me that I got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning! And the Mother Superior said, I wasn't going to say that. I was just going to say, what are you doing with the bishop's shoes on?
I am what you would, might call a practicing atheist. I'm quite happy to be an atheist because I think actually God likes atheists better. We never ask him for anything. We're not bothering him all the time, saying, oh, God, please help me, I'm with this thing. And as a practicing atheist, there's certain things that I travel around the world, and no matter where I go, somebody called Gideon leaves me this book to read. It's an Irish book because it says it all began at the beginning. There are certain things that, when I read the Bible, and I do read the Bible, that I find difficult to understand. I mean, if God has been there forever, what was he doing before he got to us? I mean, what was he out there doing? Was he sitting there going, bored today, what'll I do? I mean, suddenly from nowhere, he suddenly decided to create a world. I'll make a world, that's what. Make a world, yes, that's what I'll do. Rivers, seas, boom, mountains. Boom, everything is there. I want a garden. I'd like a nice garden. Quack! Garden me. Hate gardening. Need a garden. Ah, gardener, spit and dust. Adam. Hey! And he, Adam, never once says, where in the name of God did I come from? I mean, he's 40 years of age. He has no child, he has no recall. He doesn't say, how did I get here? But he's quite happy. He just kind of trundles around the garden, working away. And God is looking at him. And he sees that Adam is happy. I didn't put him there to be happy. I'll put a stop to that. And God, during the night, sneaks down like a thief and steals, doesn't ask, doesn't request, doesn't... steals it. His rib. And from his rib, he makes woman. And Adam wakes up in the morning, he's a real thickie. He's lying there, he's saying, and there's somebody else, he doesn't say, where did you come from? How the hell did you get here? Where did you get those lumps? Just goes out and goes gardening. And God comes down and has a conversation with Eve and tells her that she can eat of any fruit in the tree in the whole garden with the exception of one fruit tree. He's talking to a woman. He actually tells her not to eat of the fruit. And then she said, which tree can I eat? He said, that one over there. He points it out to her. And when he goes and hides, and she sneaks up to the tree, and a snake comes down and has a conversation. A snake. Now, if I see a snake, I'll back off. One starts talking, I'll crap myself. And the snake actually convinces her to eat the apple. And she eats the apple. And when she eats the apple, she learns shame. That's what happens when you eat apples. Now, she's not ashamed that she's disobeyed God or that she's eaten the apple. She's ashamed of one here, one part of her body. That's all. She becomes ashamed of that area of the body. Now, why that area? Why not her elbow?
Her nose. Do you actually realize that if Eve had been ashamed of her nose, every woman in the world now would be ashamed of your noses. You'd all be sitting here tonight with little nose knickers on. Men would be in nightclubs watching totally naked ladies with G-strings on their noses. Take them off. Oh, I saw a nose. Oh. And this is the book. This is the book that you'll go into court and place your hand upon. And swear to tell the truth, the whole truth.
The first funeral I ever went to, and believe me, this is true, I was 6 years of age. And as they lowered the box into the ground, the priest said, in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost. And I, for years, used to bless myself and say, in the name of the Father and the Son and into the Holy Ghost. Little fella dies and goes to heaven, and St. Peter said, would you like to have a look around in heaven? And the fella said, yeah, I would, actually. So they're looking around heaven. And he said, who are those people over there? He said, oh, they are the Muslims. They are Muslims there. And over there we have the Jewish people. And these are Anglicans and Hindus, Baptists. He said, why do you have this big wall here? He said, behind the wall, you see, we have the Catholics. He said, why do you have the Catholics behind the wall? He said, shh, they like to think that they're the only ones here.
We will return after this break.
Hey there.
Barev.
We're the Armenian Students Association, and we're here to bring together everyone,
Armenians and non-Armenians,
who are interested in learning about the Armenian culture here at UBC.
Find us on Facebook at ASAUBC to stay up to date. We look forward to seeing you at our future events.
You're listening to Radio Free Thinker on CITR 101.9 FM, the Center for Creation for Rational Thought and Skeptical Thinking. And we are back. Next up we have Lewis Black and his thoughts on creationism. Let's listen and laugh.
Was the earth created in 7 days? No. For those of you who believe it was, for you Christians, let me tell you, then you do not understand the Jewish people. We Jews understand that it did not take place in 7 days, and that's because we know what we're good at. And what we're really good at is bullshit. This is a wonderful story that was told to the people in the desert in order to distract them from the fact that they did not have air conditioning. I would love to have the faith to believe that it took place in 7 days, but I have thoughts. And that can really fuck up the faith thing. Just ask any Catholic priest. There are fossils. Whenever anybody tries to tell me that they believe it took place in 7 days, I reach for a fossil and go, fossil. And if they keep talking, I throw it just over their head. There are people who believe that dinosaurs and men lived together, that they roamed the earth at the same time. There are museums that children go to in which they build dioramas to show them this. And what this is, purely and simply, is a clinical psychotic reaction. They are crazy. They are stone cold fuck nuts. I can't be kind about this because these people are watching the Flintstones as if it were a documentary. Now, there is a big difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament, and that is the New Testament God is really kind of a great guy. He is, especially when you compare him to the Old Testament God, who is a prick. I don't know what happened to God, you know, over time. How he matured, if he went to an anger management class. Or maybe just the birth of a son calmed him down. But before he had the kid, holy, he was out of control. Just read the Old Testament, it's unbelievable. Look at Abraham, the first man to have faith in one God. And what does God do? Hey, Abraham, come here. Come here. Bring your kid. Let's barbecue him. Moses spends his life, crosses the desert with them, 40 years devoting to his people to get across the desert to the promised land. And God goes, hey, Mo, you're not getting in. Kiss my ass. Guy you want to work for. The reason that the Old Testament God is a prick was because the Old Testament is designed as a book to get the Jews to straighten up and fucking fly right. Because they were out of control. They were 10 hairs away from being baboons. And that's the point when I do that in the South that you can hear the veritable fucking pin drop. Figure it out, okay? You watch Jerry Springer. That's what we're like now. Imagine what they were like then. They needed rules. They needed to know that marriage takes place between a man and a woman. Because they were wandering into camp with camels going, I'm in love! What you are, you can't marry a snapping turtle, asshole! But it's not good enough for our president that it's written in the Bible. He felt it was just an imperative that we have to put it in the Constitution, and so do many states. Because apparently we heterosexuals have reached a point we're so fucked up that we better write it down in case we forget who we're supposed to marry. It's unbelievable. It's in the book already. What, do you need to print it? Are you crazy? It's...
And to close the show, we have some homegrown Canadian atheist comedy from Kids in the Hall alumni, Dave Foley, and his thoughts of Santa and the Mormons.
I am an atheist. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah! Yeah, everything is meaningless. Woo! To nothing. But it's true, I'm an atheist. I've been an atheist most of my life. And people talk about there being a war on religion in America, and nothing could be further from the truth. There's no war on religion. America is the most, outside of the Islamic world, America is the most religious country on earth, right? And there's no war on religion because atheists like myself have zero political power in this country. Zero. You cannot be elected to any public office in America as an atheist. It's impossible. They did a poll where they asked people, who can you see yourself voting for? You know, man, woman, you know, black, white, Jew, gay, straight, three-legged cat, down to atheists. And zero. Nobody would vote for an atheist, right? Do you know how many atheists are in Congress right now? Zero. There was one until the last election. Jeff Stark was a congressman in San Francisco, right? And he was elected to Congress in 1973. Came out as an atheist in 2007. Yeah, so take that, gays. Our closet is way deeper and darker than yours. Our closet goes all the way through to fucking Narnia. And you go out the wrong end of that closet, there's a bunch of Catholics with a talking lion that will eat you. So there's no fucking war on religion in America, all right? Relax. And I know there are probably people here tonight who have faith and are faithful, and that's creepy. It is. It's because if to the faithless, it truly is just creepy. It creeps us out. It makes us feel weird when you talk about your faith, because I can liken it to this. It's like Santa Claus, you know? We all go, when children believe in Santa Claus, oh, that's wonderful. Let the children believe in Santa Claus. Don't ruin Christmas for the children. Let them believe in Santa. But if you run into someone 21 years old who still believes in Santa, you will not leave him alone with your children. You'll organize a neighborhood watch because it's creepy. And that's what faith looks like to the faithless. And religion to me has always just seemed like a form of socially acceptable psychosis. And I'll explain, because it's just like if you were the only person on earth who believed a tenet of any major religion, if you were the only person on earth who believed that, you would just seem crazy. It's not about the ideas themselves, it's about how many people believe the idea that gives it credibility and gives it respectability. And as an example, I'll pick something that's pretty accepted and respected in our culture right now, which is Catholicism and communion, right? Now, communion, the miracle of communion, if you're not aware of what it literally is, it is something called transubstantiation, which is the Catholic doctrine that the host, the Eucharist, the cracker, is literally, not poetically, not figuratively, not symbolically, but is literally the body of Christ. It just looks like a cracker. That's the miracle part. Jesus disguised himself as a cracker. And the wine is literally the blood of Jesus. All right? Now, millions of people believe this around the world, so we treat it with respect. Right? But if you were the only person on earth who believed this, and someone came across you with your glass of wine and your plate of crackers and said, "What you up to?" And you said, "I'm just having me some Jesus meat. Nom, 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 delicious Jesus meat. Nom, nom. Wash it down with the blood of the Lamb. Nom, nom, nom. You can't have any. I'm the only Catholic." You would lock him the fuck up. That is crazy bullshit. So I think, like, if you're a Scientologist or a Mormon and you see Catholics giggling, remember that bullshit. Not that Mormons aren't super bullshitty. They are. They're super crazy bullshitty. Mormons. Oh, my God. And you know, Mormons, they don't believe in the same Jesus. You know that, right? They believe in sort of an alt Jesus who I believe is soy-based. And one of the things that came to light was that Mormons were doing something called baptism by proxy. And if you don't know what this is the practice of baptizing dead people into the Mormon faith. What they do is they have volunteers who come in, and each volunteer can represent 20 dead souls, and they jump into the baptismal tub, and they walk across and jump out, and someone else jumps in and out and in and out. It's a volume business. They keep it going all day. And it came to light that they were baptizing Jews killed in the Holocaust. They had baptized 100,000 Jews into the Mormon faith through this process. They baptized Anne Frank 9 times. Bitch just would not take. And And the Jewish community heard about this, and they were outraged. You know, there was Elie Wiesel, the great writer, and the Simon Wiesenthal Institute heard about this. They started protesting and saying, the Mormon Church must stop this. This must stop. This is a horrible atrocity. How dare you baptize our ancestors into the Mormon faith against their will? How dare you? This must stop. Which I think goes to show the Jews are fucking crazy.